Welcome, Karen, to Writers Series.
Hi, Sasha. Thanks for having me.
Today we're celebrating your craft of writing, and I find your story to be interesting because coming from a business background, you happen to be a corporate finance writer. At what point in your life were you introduced to the craft of writing?
I was introduced to writing fiction at a very, very young age. I've always loved to read, and as a small child, I used to write my own little stories about my school friends and my family and my pets and so on. But then when I got older and I started to build a career in finance, I just started to do a lot of corporate writing and along the lines of training, because I was actually a trainer of financial planners. I never wanted to be a financial planner, but I trained financial planners, and a lot of that involved creating training materials and courseware and that kind of thing. And a boss said to me one day, "You know, you really should be a writer." And I thought, you know, I've always wanted to be a writer, but the corporate world has its way of sucking you in, and it can often be really difficult to take off a corporate hat and put on a fiction hat. Although I had a lot of fiction stories bubbling around in my mind, it wasn't till I was in my 30s that I started to get serious about writing fiction again. And I sort of juggled two worlds, if you like, having one foot in the corporate world and another foot in the fiction world. And I found that my true passion is fiction. Although, you know, I make a lot more money from writing non-fiction, but given my choice, I would always be writing fiction. But today, these days, I still write articles for financial magazines and a lot of technical material for banks and stockbrokers and organizations. So I'm still juggling both worlds.
What I found to be fascinating was during the time that you were heavily invested in the finance writing, how were you able to extract the satisfaction as a writer?
It was the creativity. I was very fortunate to be employed in a company that had its head office about 4,000 kilometres from where I was. I was sort of a one-person office in Melbourne, and my company's head office was in Brisbane, and which is a long, long, long way away. And as the only representative of my company in Melbourne, I was tasked with visiting a lot of our clients, our financial planning clients, and going out and talking to them about what their training needs were. And as individuals, their training needs were very varied, which meant that I had license to start creating material based around what I thought would suit them and make it as engaging and as interesting as it would be, because these were boutique offices that were trying to upskill their employees. And as you can imagine, finance, because it's governed by legislation and lots of regulation, it can be a really difficult subject to keep a person's interest in. So I was given a lot of opportunity to get creative and to experiment with materials and delivery methods to make it engaging, to make learning fun, if you like, in an area that is really a very serious area and not a lot of smiles to be had when you're teaching tax and legislation. But I was given the opportunity to get creative, and it was good fun.
Now we spring forward to the fiction part of your career. You are a fan of writing short stories. What is your take on the benefits and the cons of writing a short story? Because I often meet authors that love penning 60,000-word novels, or then there are those that revel in 5,000-word stories.
Look, I love writing novels. I've actually written four novels, but I got my start writing short stories. And I think the benefit for anybody, whether you decide to write only short stories or you use short stories as a springboard into larger fiction, short stories are an amazing grounding, because I first discovered that I could do it by entering competitions and getting feedback on my entries. Because as a writer, you always we all suffer as you can imagine, from that imposter syndrome. Nobody believes that they can do it. So I would write a short story, I would send it off to competition. And when I started winning prizes, I thought, oh boy, there might be something in this. And it gave me the confidence to expand my horizons and to start educating myself more. I started doing writing workshops and learning about, structure and that kind of thing. Short stories are an amazing stepping stone, whether you decide you want to just always only write short stories or if you want to move into longer fiction. Short stories have an amazing place in the literary world. And, when I first published, my first published book was a compilation of short stories. And I was told once that, oh, these will never sell. You'll never get them into a bookshop. You'll never sell them. And then I discovered that I was actually selling them and bookshops were picking them up and taking them on board. And they were marketing them as gifts. And that was something that took me by surprise. I was very thrilled. And short stories, to my great surprise, were marketable and fun, and people love to just have a book that they can dip in and out of as they like without having to get stuck with a long, long story. So they definitely have their place.
You share a wonderful point. How are you able to balance whether it's the feedback or the critique of a third party saying this will not sell and knowing that you are the creator of this story and you know how far this story can travel?
It really gets back to confidence. For me, my stories, many of them that I'd put in my book had won awards. So that gave me the confidence to believe that somebody out there might want to read them. So, and I engaged an artist to design a cover for me because I wanted it to be very personal. And I just thought, I'm going to give this a shot. I'll give it my best shot and just see how I go. And I was very, very fortunate that I have a very supportive husband, and I had a group of friends and family around me who were like, go for it, go for it. So I went for it. And I started approaching bookstores because it was self-published. I started approaching bookstores and asking them would they take it. And because it was just a little book, a cute little, a pocket-sized book that people could just slip into their handbags or into their briefcases or a satchel. It was very portable. People were willing to take it on board because it didn't take up a lot of shelf space, but it looked pretty. So, and really, they were only taking a couple of copies at a time because they weren't taking on a lot of risk, and I certainly wasn't. I had these books. To me, I just had to get them out there and hope that somebody would read them. And Sasha, one of the most exciting things that ever happened to me with that book was one of the bookstores that had stocked it phoned me one day to say that they were doing a stock take and discovered that someone had stolen my book. And I thought, wow, somebody stole my book. They chose of all the books in the store, they chose my book to steal. And I thought, that's not that we advocate stealing, but I was thrilled to think that somebody did that. You know what I mean?
That's an understated form of flattery that out of all the
It is, isn't it? I know, I couldn't believe it. But they thought it was very funny because they were terribly supportive of me, this bookstore, and they thought that I'd be thrilled. They knew that I would see the humor in it.
Karen, for all writers listening out there, so far in your career path, have you received any constructive critique that has changed and made your writing better?
Yes, definitely. Very early days, I'd written my first manuscript for my first fiction book, which is called Torn. And as a gift, my husband had paid for an independent manuscript assessment. And I sent off my manuscript hoping for the best. And this wonderful lady came back with an assessment of, I think she did the first three chapters or something. And I was such a novice, Sasha. I had no idea what I was doing, but she gave me so much feedback, even in those first three chapters that she looked at. And the biggest piece of feedback she gave me was, have a look at where the main action starts. So you look at your manuscript, you've got the starting point in your first three chapters. Reading through that, those first chapters, where is the first piece of dramatic action. And, I could see where that was. And that was about half a chapter in. And she said, well, that is where you start your story. Don't start with all the guff at the start, but your story starts with that first piece of action, and you can cut out that first half chapter that was just getting in the way. And that now, when I do a lot of writing workshops and I get out and talk to people, and I always repeat that piece of advice, don't just start where you think you want to start. Look at the very first piece of dramatic action that's taking place and cut out everything before it, and that's where you start your story. Now, if the other piece of information is valuable, you can just drip feed that through the story to keep your readers engaged and give them a little bit of backstory as they go. But always open with that first big piece of drama that's happening to your main protagonist. And that, to me, was one of the greatest pieces of information or advice I ever received. And it certainly has caused me to go back and revisit all of my work and say, okay, I need to cut out all this guff. It's valuable and it can go into the story in different bits throughout the story, but it doesn't have to be at the front. I'm going to lose my readers at the front. I need to start with a bang.
In your fictional character development, what percentage of these characters do you infuse a part of yourself in them?
I'd like to say none, but in reality, it's probably not true. I think maybe different characters will take different pieces from me. I try not to make the characters me, because I want them to stand alone. I want them to be their own people. I want them to have their own likes and dislikes and not be a reflection of me. So it would be a really small percentage. I think, one character might have this part of me and another character might have another part of me. But I really don't try to embed my characters with my influence. I need them to be their own people.
Karen, do you have a writing routine that you adhere to?
Yes. First of all, if I have a deadline for one of my financial articles, I cannot even think about fiction. I have to get that deadline done, so I'll get that out of the way. And then I can't write fiction the same day that I've written non-fiction because the two just don't work side by side. So I'll get my non-fiction responsibilities out of the way, and then the next day I'll think, okay, today I'm going to spend working on my book. And so that will start with coffee, invariably quite a bit of chocolate. I have a lovely view from my office window where I watch a lot of our native birds and wildlife. And often I'll put on some music that sort of, if I'm writing something dramatic, I'll put on some dramatic music. If I'm writing something romantic or something tranquil, I'll put on appropriate music. And then I'll just get stuck in. And I can lose hours. I can be lost in, some English countryside or a mansion or something in the 18th century, in a different world for hours and hours. And, my husband will come home from work and suddenly it's dark and it's cold and I'm hungry and I haven't even noticed I've been lost in this wonderful world.
For new writers starting out there, are there any tips that you have for them?
Yes. As mentioned earlier, just start from your big dramatic piece of action. But the main thing is to just start writing. And I know it's been said before, but just start writing and don't expect your first draft is your book because it's not. It's never going to be. My books all go through at least six or seven redrafts before they even get to the editor. And then they go through another few drafts. So I've heard about some very famous authors who redraft up to 11 or 12 times. Don't be afraid to just throw it all down because later on is when you start polishing. Later on, you're developing your characters and fleshing it out and putting all the nuanced information in there. But you really do just have to get it down. The other thing that can be a big trap for novice writers, but also for myself, I find myself doing it all the time, is spending way too much time rereading what you did yesterday. Don't try not to reread, just keep working on it, keep building on what you've previously, just keep going and going and going until you get that first draft down. Then you go back and reread and start polishing. acting and developing and fleshing out your character. The other piece of advice I always give people is that it doesn't matter whether you've written the best prose that has ever been written. If it doesn't advance the story, it needs to go because you need to keep your language concise. You keep the readers engaged and turning the pages. Try not to just load up a lot of information. If it's not valuable to the story, if it's not going to drive the story forward, then get rid of it. It's called killing your darlings, and it's so important to driving the story forward is to keep it engaging, keep it exciting, keep it moving. Try not to get bogged down in that detail because your readers will close the book. You want them to keep turning the pages.
And for fun, out of all the short stories that you've written, if you had to bring one to life in the form of a movie or a film, which one would it be and why?
Oh, now that's a tough question. I wrote a story and it's called The Small Town, and it won first prize in an award. I can't remember the award, but it's about a young man who is conscripted to go to war, and he comes from this small town, and he all the way through I can't give you too much. We've got a big twist at the end, but the whole town comes out to see him off on the train as he departs, and later on he doesn't make it back alive, but he comes home and they bury him at home. But there is a big twist at the end, and it's a beautiful story. The reason why I love that story and I'd love to see it is because it's based on a poem that my dad wrote when I was a little girl, and I was so enchanted by the story and by the twist at the end of the poem that I said to my dad, "Would you mind if I wrote this as a short story?" And he was really chuffed, and he said, "Oh, I'd love you to do that." And then when I wrote it and then sent it off to a competition and it won a prize, he was thrilled to pieces. So I would love to see that in a film. My dad is no longer with us. He passed away, about 15 years ago now, but he would be chuffed to see it as a film as well. So that would be the one. It's called The Small Town.
What a beautiful anecdote. And finally, Karen, are there any exciting projects that you're working on, and where can readers find you?
Okay, well, at the moment I'm working on a book set in Australia. All my novels have been set in the UK, and I'm often asked why do all your books set in the UK? Why don't you write something set in Australia? We've got such a lovely heritage. So, I'm working on a novel that is set in Victoria during our gold rush in the 1850s, and it's about a young lady who is finds herself widowed, and how she makes it as a success in a very rough male-dominated world. And since it's not fully written yet, I can't go any further with telling you more about it. But people can find me on my website. It's karenturner.com.au. I'm also on Facebook, Karen Turner Author, or I'm on Instagram, Karen Turner. So, and I love hearing from people. So if people want to reach out and say hi to me, I'd absolutely love it.
Erin, thank you for chatting with us today on Writers Series.
Thank you so much for having me.